MyAudiobooks.ai presents The City the Wind Betrayed, How the World's Worst Bioweapons Accident Was Hidden for 13 Years. In the last week of April, 1979, the people of Sverdlovsk, a closed industrial city in the Soviet Urals, began dying of bad meat. That, at least, was the explanation the authorities provided. An unfortunate outbreak of intestinal anthrax, they said, traced to contaminated meat from animals sick with a natural rural disease. Dozens of residents in the southern districts of the city fell ill with fevers that turned to black lesions on the lungs, visible on the x-rays of the dead. Families were told to burn the meat. Streets were washed. And the Soviet Union filed the matter away as a local tragedy of the food supply. A tragedy that killed, by the most conservative accounting, more than 60 people in a matter of weeks, in a narrow corridor of a single city, downwind of a military installation the maps did not show. It is worth dwelling for a moment on how a cover story like that is actually operated, because the Sverdlovsk cover-up was not a press release, it was a logistics operation. In the days after the deaths began, the machinery of the closed city turned to the story's support. Teams washed the streets and hosed down walls, supposedly against veterinary contamination. Stray dogs were shot. A domestic animal vaccination campaign was announced. Meat was confiscated and burned in public, so that the story had props. The KGB took control of the hospitals receiving the dying, and the paperwork of death was rerouted. Autopsy findings were classified, doctors were bound to secrecy, and the official diagnosis on the death certificates described a gastrointestinal catastrophe consistent with bad meat. Families buried their dead with the cover story read aloud to them. This is the part that should be understood precisely. The cover-up was not passive silence. It was the active manufacture of an alternative reality, produced with the same competence the state applied to any military operation. And it worked because every institution that touched the evidence, hospital, police, registry, newspaper, answered to the same center. It held until the Soviet Union itself collapsed, and the documents and the insiders came out, and the world finally learned what the shape of the deaths had been saying all along. On April 2, 1979, a plume of weapons-grade anthrax spores escaped from Compound 19, a military microbiology facility in Sverdlovsk, and drifted southeast over the city on the wind. The people who died did not eat the anthrax. They breathed it out of the air, in a line drawn by the day's wind, and the Soviet state watched them die, wrote meat on the paperwork, and kept its secrets. This is the story of the worst known accident in the history of biological weapons, and of the cover-up that concealed it from a superpower's entire intelligence apparatus for more than a decade. But it is also a story about something more durable than one cover-up, about the fact that evidence outlives the lie told over it. The Sverdlovsk cover story was not defeated by espionage. It was defeated by epidemiology, by the patient reading of who died, where, and of what. Until the map of the dead drew a line no foodborne outbreak could explain. Every debate the world has had since about laboratory accidents, from inspectors in Iraq to the origins of a pandemic, runs through the lesson of this city. The evidence pattern survives the cover story. The only question is whether anyone is permitted or willing to read it. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. First, the disease itself, because the entire cover-up depended on most people not knowing the difference between two ways of catching it. Anthrax is a bacterium that forms spores, armor-plated seed forms that can survive in soil for decades, waiting for a host. There are three ways in. Cutaneous anthrax comes through the skin, from handling infected animals or hides. It forms a black, painless ulcer, and it is survivable with treatment. Intestinal anthrax comes from eating contaminated meat. It attacks the gut, and it is deadly, but comparatively rare, because cooking and inspection catch most of it. And then there is inhalation anthrax, the third way, the weapons way, caused by breathing spores directly into the lungs. Inhalation anthrax has nothing to do with food. It produces a biphasic illness, a few days of flu-like symptoms, a false recovery, and then a catastrophic second phase of respiratory failure and sepsis that is almost always fatal without immediate treatment. The physics of the third way explains why it is the weapons way. A spore that kills by inhalation must be the right size, a few micrometers across, small enough to ride the air for miles and to slip past the nose and throat's defenses, deep into the lung, but large enough to carry its payload. Weaponization is, in large part, the engineering of that size, milling and processing the agent until the particles drift like smoke and lodge like seed. It is why the release of a quantity that would fit in a coffee cup can endanger a city. The dose is in the air, and the air is everywhere. And it is why the corridor of the dead was narrow and long rather than wide and short. The wind sheared the cloud downwind, diluting it with distance, so that lethality mapped geography with terrible precision. The investigators who later reconstructed that day noted a detail that belongs in every account of it. Had the wind blown north instead of southeast, the cloud would have crossed open farmland and spared the city's southern districts almost entirely. The accident's human cost was decided not only by a mist filter, but by the direction of the weather on a single April morning. A reminder that the margin between a contained industrial error and a mass casualty event can be as thin as a compass needle. Now the facility, because it did not appear on any map a citizen could buy. Compound 19 was a Soviet military microbiology installation in the southern part of the city, part of the biological weapons program the Soviet Union had signed a treaty to abolish. The Biological Weapons Convention of 1972 banned the development, production, and stockpiling of biological agents as weapons. The USSR signed it and then built an institution called Biopreparat to do exactly what the treaty forbade, at a scale that remains difficult to credit. Biopreparat would eventually employ tens of thousands of people across dozens of facilities, producing weaponized anthrax, smallpox, plague, tularemia, and more in factories disguised as vaccine plants and civilian research institutes. Compound 19 was one of its anthrax sites. On April 2, 1979, a container there vented a quantity of anthrax spores into the air. The program's own second-in-command later described it in the West as a mist filter, a maintenance error, a matter of hours. The reason no treaty ever caught this is a problem with a name the inspectors gave it themselves, dual use. Nearly everything a biological weapons program needs, the fermenters, the centrifuges, the incubators, the drying equipment, the animal colonies, is also needed to make vaccines, antibiotics, enzymes, and vitamins, which is to say, needed by every legitimate biotech and pharmaceutical enterprise on Earth. The Biological Weapons Convention, for all its ambition, contains no standing inspection regime to sort the one from the other. It rests on declarations, and a state that declares its weapons plant a vaccine institute has, on paper, complied. The outside of Compound 19 looked like the outside of every industrial microbiology facility in the Soviet Union. The difference was in what the fermenters were growing, and that difference could only be proven from inside, by an opened archive, by someone leaving with the truth, or by an accident big enough to paint the evidence onto the city itself. The plume, the drifting cloud of spores, invisible, odorless, undetectable by any sense the human body possesses, moved southeast over the city on the day's wind, and the people in its path began, over the following days and weeks, to die. The shape of the dying is the heart of this story, because it is what eventually convicted the state of lying. If contaminated meat had caused the outbreak, the sick would have been scattered across the city wherever the meat was sold, a shotgun pattern following distribution, markets, kitchens, dinners. That is what intestinal outbreaks look like. The Sverdlovsk dead were not scattered. They were concentrated in a narrow wedge of the city, a corridor running southeast from the direction of the compound, thinning with distance, exactly as a wind-driven aerosol, a suspension of particles in air, behaving like smoke, would thin. And it was not only people. Downwind of the city, in the countryside beyond, sheep and cattle died too, in the same corridor, of the same disease.
Animals do not shop at city markets. The dead were drawing a map of the wind, and the map pointed back at the compound like a compass needle.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. The man who finally read the map in public was an outsider, and the way he did it belongs in the history of scientific courage. Matthew Meselson, a Harvard biologist, had argued for years that the Sverdlovsk outbreak could not have been meat-borne based on the pattern alone, the corridor, the timing, the animal deaths. For a decade, he was a voice in the wilderness, telling the world the Soviet explanation was epidemiologically impossible, while the Soviet Union called him a propagandist. It is worth remembering what that decade cost. A scientist of his standing, staking his credibility against a superpower's official account on the evidence of pattern alone, with no access to the records that would prove him right. He was, in the cold language of the profession, making an argument the data he could not see would either vindicate completely or destroy. The corridor was his entire case, and he made it for 13 years. When the Soviet state finally cracked, Meselson got what almost no Western scientist ever gets. He went to the city itself in 1992 with Soviet-era medical records, autopsy reports, and the freedom to map every documented case. The results, published in the journal Science in 1994, were a masterclass in what his discipline, epidemiology, the study of the distribution and determinants of disease in populations, can prove from graves and paperwork. Every case for which records survived fell inside the corridor, downwind of Compound 19. The dates of onset clustered in the days and weeks after April 2nd, matching the incubation period of inhaled anthrax. The autopsy findings described lung pathology, not gut pathology. The map the dead had drawn in 1979, Meselson published to the world in 1994, and it ended the argument. The meat story was not merely unproven, it was physically impossible. The confessions arrived from the top. Boris Yeltsin, who had been the Communist Party chief of the Sverdlovsk region at the time of the accident, admitted in 1992 that the outbreak had been caused by the military biological program, and that the KGB and the military had covered it up, a confession made more remarkable by the fact that the cover-up had, at least formally, been run on his watch. And then the defector arrived with the operating manual. Kanatjan Alibekov, known in the West as Ken Alibek, had been the deputy director of Biopreparat, the number two official of the entire Soviet biological weapons program, when he defected to the United States in 1992. A defector, in the vocabulary of intelligence, is not merely a person who leaves,
It is a person who leaves carrying what the other side most wanted to know. And Alabek carried everything. The program's scale, its agents, its factories, its accidents, including Sverdlovsk, which he described from the inside as a filter removed and not replaced during maintenance. His book, Biohazard, published in 1999, remains the definitive insider account of the largest and most secret weapons program of the biological age.
Sit with the whole picture for a moment, because its components each belong to a different era, and they only fit together across 13 years. 1972, the treaty signed. 1972 onward, the program built in secret to violate it, employing tens of thousands. 1979, the accident, the plume, the deaths. 1979 to 1992, the cover story, the washed streets, the burned meat, the closed city, the Western suspicion that could not be proven. 1992, the state's collapse, the confessions, the insiders, the opened files. 1994, the epidemiological proof, published, mapping the dead back onto the wind. Every element of the story was publicly knowable at a different time, and the full picture existed nowhere until the system that had concealed it ceased to exist. The strongest case against the hopeful reading that Sverdlovsk is a lesson about biological weapons states rather than about accidents deserves the full hearing the record gives it. The cover-up was not improvised in a panic. It was standard operating procedure, executed smoothly, sustained for 13 years, and it would very likely have held forever if the Soviet Union had not collapsed for unrelated reasons. No treaty inspection detected Compound 19's true function. No intelligence agency could prove the cover story false from outside. The lesson that worried the analysts who studied the case is not that accidents happen. Every industrial system has them. But that a determined state can make a mass casualty biological accident invisible to the world for as long as the state itself survives, and that the treaty designed to prevent the program had no instrument for finding it. On this reading, the 14-year silence is the story. Verification is the hard part of any weapons agreement, and biology is the hardest domain of all, because a weapons lab looks exactly like a vaccine plant until the day the wind changes. And the strongest case for the other reading, the hopeful one, is Messelson's map. The cover story did not survive contact with the evidence. It merely outlived the era in which the evidence could be examined. The pattern was there from the first week. The corridor, the timing, the sheep. The lie required the world not to look closely, and the moment someone looked closely, it died. The evidence pattern survives the cover story. The cost is patience measured in years. Three developments would disprove the lesson's limits, or extend it into the present, and each is observable. First, the documentation of biopreparat's remnants. As Russian archives and emigre accounts continue to surface, if the full production record of the program, agents, quantities, destinations, ever becomes public, the Sverdlovsk file will move from case study to baseline dataset for every biological non-proliferation argument of the century. Second, the next closed state accident. The world's biosafety level 4 laboratories have multiplied across 24 countries since 1979, and the next unexplained cluster of respiratory deaths in a closed city, anywhere, will be read through the Sverdlovsk template. Corridor, timing, pathology. And the speed with which that reading is demanded will tell us whether the lesson was learned. Third, the permafrost. In 2016, a thawing reindeer carcass from a 1941 anthrax outbreak killed a 12-year-old boy and sickened dozens in the Russian Arctic. And as the Arctic warms, more of the frozen biological past is waking up on its own. No weapons program required.
The spores in the ground do not care who built the treaty. They only wait.
It is worth saying what this article has not claimed. It has not claimed the Soviet Union attacked its own city. The release was an accident, and the evidence for that is as strong as the evidence for the cover-up. It has not claimed the death toll is precisely known. The conservative count is in the 60s. Higher estimates exist, and the closed records of the period mean the true number may never be fixed. It has not claimed the Biological Weapons Convention is useless. It has claimed the Sverdlovsk case exposed the treaty's verification gap, which is a different and more precise charge.
And it has not claimed any current state is running a biopreparat. It has claimed that the institutions and the incentives that built one have not been abolished anywhere, and that the next Compound 19 will look, from the outside, like a vaccine plant.
Which returns to the corridor on the map, the wedge of streets where the wind went that day in April. The people who died there were told, in the end, nothing at all. Their families got a story about meat, and the meat was burned, and the streets were washed, and the world was none the wiser for 13 years. What undid the fiction was not a spy satellite or a stolen file, but the oldest instruments of medicine. The autopsy, the case record, the map. The dead had told the truth the whole time, in the only language they had left. Where they fell, and when, and of what. It just took the world 13 years to learn to read them. The next time the pattern appears, the reading cannot wait that long. The wind does not keep secrets. It only delivers them, downwind, to whoever is standing in the corridor.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.